The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, DK Network, DraftKings Network, like the overhead shot here at Bar Canada at the D. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland, producer number nine. So much more than a producer. Look, Sigma Derby. The last.
Go to.
The last Sigma Derby, authentic Sigma Derby, still public in this town of Las Vegas. That's true? That's the truth? Yes? Not lying?
That's what I reported a week ago.
You did report it. I don't know about your reportage. That's a word.
I read that somewhere, yes.
We got a good show here for you today. Chock full of folks. Drew Dinsick, who I feel like hasn't been on the show in like 3 weeks. Am I wrong about that? Feels that way.
It's been a couple. Yeah, it's been a couple.
Drew Dinsick, who apparently was in Croatia for some reason this last week.
Yep.
We'll get to the bottom of that. I'm not even making that up. He was in Croatia. He will be with us to talk all things National Football League Week 4 and the 3 weeks that have passed us by, get his thoughts on the early season and what he's got going for Week 4. He, of course, from the Deep Dive and NBC Sports Edge, Bet the Edge podcast, NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. We'll also talk baseball today since we didn't get a chance to yesterday with both Paul Sporer and Mark Borchard. Final week, final stretch of the Major League Baseball season. American League East still to be decided. American League West still to be decided. And, of course, the wild cards in both the American League and the National League. We'll get to that with both of those gentlemen. Pete Futak on college football. Now that the Colorado fairy tale is over. We all knew it would be over after 3 weeks. But, boy, was it over resoundingly, of course, this past weekend against the Oregon Ducks. We'll talk to Pete Futak about college football. And here's the thing. We do this every year. Usually we do it on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, for those who don't know, is the Day of Atonement. It's the holiest Jewish holiday of the year. It was yesterday, so we did Guessing Lines. We didn't have time. But Todd Wishnev always comes on the show every Yom Kippur to talk about. Now, he dubs it the Yom Kippur Massacre. Nothing happened. I just want everybody to know there was nothing, at no actual Yom Kippur Massacre that took place. I don't want to get that out there. And people are like, what did he say? What happened? He calls his gambling story that. It is, Kelly, for my money, the greatest gambling story there ever has been. And he corrects me when I say that. He did on the Megapod. He goes, oh, no, Gilly, it's not the greatest gambling story. It's the greatest story there's ever been.
I don't know that I've heard this one.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's fantastic.
I don't know how I wouldn't have heard it, though.
It's the greatest. We've told it many times on the show.
But if you haven't, I've just completely forgotten.
If you haven't heard it before, it's worth a listen. We'll do that later on. First of all, doubleheader in the National Football League last night, of course. First, the Eagles. These games were staggered by an hour. Eagles beat the Buccaneers, and they do it going away, 25-11, a score that was not indicative of the dominance that really took place. The Eagles in the end with a 27-12 advantage in first downs, 472-174 in total yards, 201-41 on the ground, 38 minutes, 55 seconds, to 21 minutes, 05 in time of possession. The Bucs had fewer than 100 yards on offense before a 75-yard drive in the fourth quarter after the game was already decided. So really it was even worse than that. 2.4 yards per rush for the Bucs. And Jalen Carter continues to solidify himself being the early favorite to win NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. He had two forced fumbles last night. He is even money at DraftKings for DROY, as the kids call it, Kelly. But this was the biggest thing about this game was two things. One, if you had the under in the second half, the number was 21, and it was on 20 with 9 after the Bucs got themselves that long drive and then the two-point conversion, it was on 20 with 9:22 left in the ballgame, 9 minutes, 22 seconds left in the game. And if you're on the under of the second half at that point, you're like, well, I mean, you know what would be the perfect thing if I could dream this up? If Philly would just matriculate the ball down the field and use up all 9 minutes and 22 seconds. And that is exactly what happened, which is you cannot get more dominant than that. You could argue, oh, the Dolphins track me. What are you talking about? One play and they score. That is the true grind them out drive to wrap up a game. They convert a 4th-and-2 at the end to just get the first down but not the score. And so it ends 25-11, and unders in the second half cash as a result.
I'm going to assume you were on that bet.
I was on that bet. But I want to say the bigger thing. That's how I'm so locked into it. But the other thing I want to say is,
if you ever hear us bring up random bets like that in the course of games, it usually means because we were on it.
Well, I wouldn't have brought it up if it wasn't for the 9/22
right,
thing.
No, I got it.
Trust me, there's plenty of bets we're on, good and bad, that we never even broach, that we just do while on the spot. The thing about that I want to talk about, though, is what about all that sharp, quote-unquote, money that came in on the Bucks leading up to that game that brought that spread as low as 4.5 at one point? And I just sort of want to – were you on the Bucks in this pre-flop?
No.
What was behind that? And, again, there's a lot of this irrational stuff. Just because some money is deemed sharp, we tend to purge when it doesn't manifest. We won't let it – we won't let that purge. Why? Looking back on this, because we were both 4-1 in the contest, do you regret that this wasn't one of your plays in the end? Because it was enough. Let's put it this way.
No.
It was enough to make me think to myself, what are people seeing that I'm not getting here?
No, it was never really a consideration for me. It's you know, we've talked about for the past few weeks on the show. I was one of those people that was a little bit higher on the Bucks coming into the season than I felt like the most of the market was. But this game, when it was, you know, what did it open? 6? It was like 6, 6.5. I had some interest in the Tampa Bay side then, but then it got in that no man's land, and it was kind of in 5.5, and then, like you said, closed to mainly 4.5. I really didn't have any interest then. But, yeah, I mean, I think what you saw last night was just the, like, okay, takes 3 weeks, but now you know where these two teams really stand.
I was just about to make that point about the Eagles. The Eagles have now played their preseason games.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And they're just rounding into form, and they've banked all the wins.
Yep.
Even while just ramping it up.
And for the Bucks, look, I think you're still they're still good enough and talented enough to beat up on some bad teams. But you run into a real good team like this, you don't stand a chance.
That's about as good of an assessment of the Bucks as you'll get. The second game, the Rams at the Bengals. Joe Burrow did end up playing. Tested that calf just prior to the game. He was a go in the end. He ends up having himself an okay game, I guess. The real stat hog was Ja'Marr Chase, 12 catches for 141 yards on 15 targets. So he breaks out. Bengals get off the schneid. That's their first win of the young season. So they get off the mat of the winless, which, by the way, leaves us 4 winless teams in both and the 4 teams play each other in 2 games this coming weekend. So you have Minnesota taking on Carolina, and you have Denver taking on the Bears. So barring ties, we'll have only 2 winless in the market of who will be the last winless team after this week. But the Bengals, they are now no longer one of them. They're 1-2. This game, to me, there's not a whole bunch to say other than, for me, and I don't know if this is a consensus opinion, I felt like the Rams just looked off the whole time. Their game plan looked strange. I was speaking to somebody else who has Puka Nacua, Offensive Rookie of the Year tickets. It was very peculiar how he wasn't targeted. Now, the broadcast team made point, oh, they're really taking Nacua out of it. I'm not sure how true that really was, because if you tracked him on the field, he was open a lot, and Matt Stafford just didn't go to him, which was kind of peculiar. It was like, we must feed Kyren Williams. We must get him the ball. And at one point, he had like 7 targets and only 2 catches. So that was a little off. And now I'm gonna say to you, I want to see how quickly you are aware of what I'm about to get at here, how this comes up in your brain as I go through this. Let me just go through the last sequence of this game. It's 19-9 with, the Bengals got up 19-9 with 7:13 left in this game. The Rams had a 3-and-out. They punted down 10 with 6:08 left. All right? That's the first thing. They punted down 10 with 6:08 left in the game. Cincinnati went 3-and-out. The Rams got the ball back. They go 75 yards. Ended up with a Stafford to Tutu Atwell play from 1 out to make it 19-16. But that was with 1:03 left. 1:03 left. Like, the game had almost ended. On that drive, the Rams were replete with receivers who didn't go out of bounds. Tyler Bigsby didn't go out of bounds. Also, Tutu Atwell didn't on a particular play as well. Then they needed 2 scores. They decided not to kick a field goal at one point, needing 2 scores north of the 2-minute warning. Are you figuring out where I'm getting at with this?
Yep.
Then, first and goal with 1:35 left, they decide to run Kyren Williams. And the clock just keeps going at that point, because I think they only had one timeout then, if one timeout the most, if not zero.
Yeah.
So I just named receivers not going out of bounds, didn't kick the field goal north of the two-minute warning, running a running play on first and goal. And y'all wanted to tell me he knew the point spread last week? Just stop it. Just stop it already. Mic drop. That argument is over. This is what my point was last week when everyone was like, oh, he kicked the field goal to get within seven. The point spread was 7.5 last week when the Rams were playing. Who was it, the Seahawks? Was it the Seahawks? Oh, no, the Niners. Pardon me, yeah. The Niners. And there's no way. And I said that, and people were like, oh, he knew the spread or he was doing it for tiebreaker purposes. And I said, here's the third option. He just isn't that sharp, Sean McVay, with final minute or two-minute decision-making. Last night proved it. The Rams have no clue what they're doing in game management. You think he knows the point spread and was playing with the point spread? No. He just went through with the field goal last week because he just had it in mind that he needed two scores. It got down to 4 seconds. He's like, oh, we'll just go through it. We'll kick a field goal. He does not know anything.
Yeah, just going back to last night, I really didn't have a problem with what they were doing. Until that running play, and I know Orlovsky freaked out about it on the broadcast, too, but I'm like, wait.
Orlovsky was the only one who brought up anything.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what? How are you running the ball right now? Like, this is – I was very okay with the drive going as is, cause especially you get inside the 10, right?
Yeah.
It feels like you need to come away with a touchdown then at that point. But you're like, you line up and run the ball? Like, what? You don't have time to be doing that.
The best part of that segment was my inability to distinguish between Tank Bigsby and Tyler Higbee. Just want to point that out as well.
I didn't even know where you were going.
Like, what is it? Bigsby, Higbee? I was just so eager to make my point. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the other side. All things NFL. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you this football season to start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now and save 40% off our football season special when you use promo code ANG. Kelly, you tell me that it's code red. We need somebody to do promo code ANG.
That's right. Get in there, sign up now, or else Drew Dinsick can't come back on this air ever.
That's right.
That's what I was told.
That's what we're told. That's the thing. And we want Drew on. Get access to everything we do this football season, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Remember to use promo code ANG to save 40% when you sign up on a football season special today. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Tomorrow on the show, Will Hill will join us. And we'll do a 30-for-30 type investigation on Will Hill getting 9 out of 9 on his immaculate grid today, but somehow scoring north of 300 points.
Okay.
This is almost impossible. You almost have to try to do that. He's like answering. He must be answering like Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Barry Bonds, because you're rewarded for obscurity.
Right.
9 of 9 and over 300. We'll get to the bottom of that. Drew Dinsick joins us. Back in this country, on a mid-football season trip overseas, we have to get to the bottom of that. NBC Sports Bet the Edge and Deep Dive podcast host Drew Dinsick. How you doing, Drewski? What's happening?
I'm tremendous, and I'm glad that in the intro there you brought up my extreme negotiating power. That's right.
Yes.
I went on strike last week. I said if they don't give you guys the support we need to get a clear signal so I can see Kelly and Gil when I do my segment, then I'm not coming back.
That's right.
You guys are clear as a bell today. So well done to the tech team. Thank you for getting us squared away.
Yeah, you sound great.
Now go sign up.
Now go sign up using the promo code ANG, again, at VSiN.com/subscribe. You were in Croatia. Why?
Because it's one of the most beautiful places on Earth, Gil. I didn't really get to travel this summer. Basically, did some stuff in California, but, was a little bit too busy to plan, like, a real deal trip. And if you didn't already know, it's a plus EV move to kind of shoot for the shoulder season. Yeah. You know, you really got to wait until the kids are back in school before you try to do the international travel because just in general, the crowds are lighter. The costs are cheaper. And you got a little more flexibility, a little more freedom to move about the country. And Croatia, I've been there once before. I knew it was for me. We went back and spent a good solid 10 days there. And it was absolutely mind-blowingly amazing vacation. I'm already thinking about the future and doing like a whole month-long residency there at some point in the summer in some future year. But yeah, it was exactly in my wheelhouse.
Good for you.
You know, great beaches, incredible wine, and the sights and sounds were all outstanding.
There it is, the wine part. I knew that was part of your deal there. Plus EV move was the other part of that. Before we get to what you like in week four, let's talk, since we haven't had a chance to. 3 weeks now in the books of the National Football League season. Yeah. First of all, how have you done betting-wise? And part and parcel with that, what from your preseason projections has gone the most swimmingly, the most consistent to your projections? And what has been completely, oh, I didn't see that coming?
Well, I guess I'll answer the first part first. I squeaked out profit weeks one and weeks two, and then it was at week three where I did the least amount of work, had no idea who was playing, spraying the board, was my best week of the season by far. So I can't really tell you that I have a good read on what's happening right now. My preseason expectations for a lot of these teams have completely gone out the window. Some of the highest confidence stuff that I had in terms of who was going to be good, bad, or otherwise have completely fallen flat. The Jaguars look lost. The Steelers look miserable, yet they have two wins, so maybe Tomlin, coach of the year, isn't entirely dead yet, but he's got a lot of makeup to do to catch Mike McDaniel, I gotta tell you that much.
Yeah.
And Matt Canada's doing him no favors, but I didn't really have especially strong opinions about the NFC. I thought the Falcons were going to be feisty. I don't feel super great about that anymore. I thought the Packers might be able to put a little bit of a lead on the NFC North. I don't feel super great about that anymore. I think maybe the only two opinions that I had coming into the season, one that the Bills might be the best team in the AFC, and that two, I thought Dallas was going to, threaten, for the one seed, but that ultimately no one was going to catch the Niners. You know, that I think at the very top, I feel fine about those general, those general reads. But otherwise, all my preseason action is pretty much is negative equity and, ready to start from scratch.
Wow. Well, it's only 3 weeks, so some of that is just, you're anticipating that it could be, at least what you've seen so far. Some of it, as you said, could still manifest. What is the, of all of those, what's the one that's the biggest head scratcher? Is it Jacksonville?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't really expect much from their defense, and so I don't think you can really say that, that's a surprise. But this offense, I thought, was going to have potential to really be something special. And while we saw them put up a pretty easy 31 week one against the Colts, the last 2 weeks, it's just been frustrating seeing them try to move the ball consistently, seeing Trevor Lawrence look like he's had some, very minor regression, seeing the drop passes and some of the decisions in the red zone with the play calling, like just in general, a lot of stuff that didn't jive with the strength of that roster and some of the strength of the skill position group. And again, it's a long season. I'm not really scared of anyone else in the AFC South taking their playoff spot. But part of the reason of being bullish on the Jags was that they could run through this division, maybe catch a couple other lucky wins, and then steal the one seed. And right now that feels pretty far away.
Pretty far away. All right. As you scan the week four board, what leaps off the page for you?
Looks like I got about five sides here and a couple of totals.
Okay.
We'll go through the sides here and you can stop me when you want to, we can circle back here and dig into some more detail, but I like Bills at 2.5. I bet Chargers at 5.5. I see that's at 6 now. I think 6 is still fair. I like Colts at -1. I would sell that out to 2.5. I like Giants at -1. I would sell that out to 2.5. And then I like your Commies catching 8.5. So those are the five sides that really stand out to me.
Commies catching 8.5. Okay, let's drill down on some of those. The first one that comes to mind is that Giants spread against the Seahawks. That is the Monday night game. The Giants are, in fact, favored. I thought the Seahawks would be favored, yes, on yesterday on guessing lines. You've already bet the Giants. What is it in this matchup that you see?
I see a Seahawks team that can't rush the passer, which means Daniel Jones is finally going to face an opponent where he'll have time to, kind of operate the offense. I think in general, they effectively waved the white flag on their Thursday night contest against the Niners. So I don't think there was really any signal there. That was just a pass. And I think, you know, with the extra rest and time to prepare for this Seattle defense, I think the Giants offense is going to get going in this one. And you flip the script and you look at what Seattle looked like when they were facing a pretty aggressive interior pass rush week one against the Rams. And I think Dexter Lawrence can imitate that pretty successfully and really kind of stymie the Seattle offense. I think Seattle's offensive line and the cluster injury they're dealing with is being slightly underpriced here by market. And I think the Giants get their first win of the season outside of three.
Okay, Buffalo, you're laying the 2.5 against the track meet that is the Miami Dolphins, coming off their 70 burger, as people are calling it. What do you like about the Bills here, besides the fact that it's lower than three? Where you got
it? Well, yeah, I'm in my historical bag here, and you know, it's very tough to repeat 70 points scored in an NFL game. The 1950 LA Rams almost did it. After scoring 70 against
who could forget?
Baltimore Colts.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And they scored 70 against the Baltimore Colts. They came back the next week. They only got 65.
Sure.
So, you know, it's tough. It's tough to go back-to-back weeks with the 70 burger. No, in seriousness, this is a pretty narrow edge. I don't think there's a ton of meat on the bone here. I think I'm just betting this because it's the game of the week and I want to watch it and I want to have some stakes involved. And my handicap isn't, like, especially sophisticated here. I just think that the Buffalo Bills defense is a much, much tougher test for the Dolphins than what they saw week one and week three, more akin to, you know, I rate the Bills and the Patriots pretty similarly in terms of what they can do to really slow these guys down. I'm not expecting Waddle to go here for the Dolphins. And so if you can kind of find ways to really bracket and take Tyreek Hill, at least keep him under, you know, say, keep him under 10 recs and 100 yards in this game, then I think Dolphins are going to have a tough time getting to 30 points. And then on the flip side, this Buffalo Bills team is rostered pretty much perfectly to take advantage of the weaknesses of the Dolphins defense right now. I think that in general, you're going to see pretty solid protection from this front. And I think Josh Allen can carve this secondary with the weapons that he's working with right now. I like the balanced attack. Cook looks like he's getting going. Some of the concepts of, you know, the heavier personnel packages that the Bills are running look like they're finally kind of, getting their feet under them in terms of what they want to be as an identity offensively. And I like that as a home favorite under three here. Nothing against the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins are absolutely in the mix for, you know, still winning the AFC East and, you know, still being in the, you know, the conversation for the one seed in the AFC. This particular matchup, I feel like the Bills are being a little bit underpriced.
Real quick before we go to break, one word answer. If the Dolphins win this game and they win it somewhat convincingly, they immediately the short shot to win the AFC?
Oh yeah, this is massive, massive equity. If
yeah.
you have, yeah, if you're yeah. if you're 4-0 and you have got your road win against the Bills in pocket, then you're basically an inside track to the one seed.
Coming back, more Drew Dinsick, his totals, and those other sides next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Win bigger by betting smarter this NFL season with Hall of Fame Bets, the sports betting analytics platform for parlays, player props, and game lines. Research every NFL, NBA, MLB, and soccer bet with historical stats and data. Stop betting in the dark. Download the Hall of Fame Bets app or visit HOFBets.com and use code WINNER to get 50% off your first month today. Start researching, start winning with Hall of Fame Bets. We get tweets at Beating the Book. I just want to read a couple here. This is from Nick. Nick at NReno133. Come on, Gil. McVay's a point shaver. He definitely knows the spread. They're 3-for-3 on covers this year. It's a bet on for me every week. Tease them early in the week. Bet on the cover day of. I don't even know how to respond anymore. If you didn't see that game, if that game last night didn't prove to you that dude has no planning on anything or has not coached him up in any kind of way, I don't know what to tell you at that point. J84 MVP Buckley. Overdue thanks to Drew for the Tour de France pick. Appreciate all your week. There you go. Drew Dinsick, whale _ capper on Twitter, rejoins us, kind enough to hang out with us for a second segment. There you go. Can you remind everyone about your Tour de France play that brought millions to all?
Jonas Vingegaard.
Yes.
That was an amazing ride by the Dane.
The Dane?
The Dane? He beat Tadej Pogacar.
Sure he did.
In impressive fashion at the Tour de France. That was a fun market. Bounced back and forth, and then ultimately he did the individual time trial late in that contest. It was a hilly stage, and he blew doors off of the field and basically won going away. So great job by him getting his second consecutive Tour de France victory.
It was a hilly stage. That was one of those segments. Is like if I asked Greg Peterson, Abilene Christian, go. Like, you could say anything, and I would just buy it. I'd be like, sure, that sounds sounds plausible. Okay, a couple more of your sides that I want to talk about before you get to your totals. Chargers, okay, I don't think we have to talk about that. We get it. They're playing the Raiders. But the Commodores, you're taking the points against the Eagles. Well, the points are the great equalizer, but what makes you think the Commodores will keep this in the number?
Are you calling them the Commodores just
Commies,
because Commanders is such
taco,
a lousy name?
Yes, yeah. Taco holders.
Like Kyle.
Anything but
the Commanders.
Yeah.
I
think that name will be gone by next year too.
I agree.
Yeah.
Washington football team is a bet for me at 8.5. I think this should be closer to 7.
I like it.
Short week for Philadelphia. I was on Philadelphia yesterday. I had them staked pretty aggressively against Tampa Bay, and it was a pretty straightforward handicap, which was Philadelphia's D-line was going to wreck that game and really kind of expose Baker Mayfield. When Baker Mayfield goes up against a top-tier D-line, I think you basically have to write off Tampa Bay getting into the 20s. Philadelphia with the short turnaround, all these guys coming off of apparently flu-like symptoms, I think it's going to be tough for them to get ready, get right for a Washington team that I think is a little bit better than the market is rating. They were bet aggressively last week against the Bills and then utterly no-showed, although there was some fluky stuff in that particular contest that I think made the score, the box score tilt against them. And I, as bad as Sam Howell was, I kind of give him credit for keeping slinging it, if that makes sense. Like, it wasn't good football from him, but he didn't back down. I like that he has like a little bit of moxie. A lot of young quarterbacks in those sort of situations, they just kind of, pack it in and they're not really trying to come back. But whatever the case is, Washington matches up fairly well against Philly. I think, you saw two pretty competitive contests between these teams last year. And I think this one's going to be similarly competitive. The general kind of matchup here that I'm excited about is I like Washington's run defense to keep Philadelphia a little bit one-dimensional here, and we just aren't seeing anywhere close to the right chemistry between Hurts and his wide receivers this season that he had at the end of last season. Some of that may be shoulder injury he's dealing with. Some of that maybe the receivers are just a little bit out of sync and out of sorts right now, dealing with undisclosed injuries of their own. You guys were joking about, point shaving or, just in general awareness of the spread and stuff yesterday. The only really weird performance I saw was AJ Brown, who very sincerely did not want to score a touchdown at the end of that Bucks-Eagles game. But whatever the case is, there's just a little bit not clicking right now for this Philadelphia pass offense, and that's really how you want to attack Washington. So I think Washington's D-line and Chase Young coming along is a pretty exciting matchup against a really good O-line for Philadelphia. You may even get a little bit of help from the refs here with kind of a little bit of added attention on Lane Johnson, who seems to be getting a little bit of a head start on every passing down. But whatever the case is, I just think this should be about a 7-point spread. So I took the 8.5 with the Commies.
I lied about the Chargers Raiders. I just want to seize on one point. We were talking about this off air. Jimmy G is in concussion protocol. When you see that, by the way, his backups, Brian Hoyer and Aiden O'Connell, when you see that in your handicapping approach, you put a line through it, you said? Like, he's not going to play? That's the assumption?
Yeah, if there's Monday morning news that a player is in the concussion protocol, you can put a red line through them playing the next week. It's too quick. Basically, they have to have made a mistake to get them into the practice, into the limited practice participant on Wednesday, which I think is where I don't know the nuances of the rule. But if you're not a limited participant on the first reported day of practice, then you're really not eligible to come out of the concussion protocol. So it's a pretty strict and kind of impressive way to protect some of these players from themselves, which I fully appreciate. But I think in terms of what do you do with that information? You put a line through it. And I'm going on the fact that Brian Hoyer popped up off the bench, put his helmet on, and was doing a couple of reps when it looked like Jimmy G was going to potentially miss some snaps after getting rolled on by TJ Watt. I'm assuming that means he really actually will be the starting quarterback here instead of Aiden O'Connell. If this is Aiden O'Connell, I don't feel great about laying the Chargers all of a sudden because he's got much more of live of an arm than Brian Hoyer does. But I don't really expect Brian Hoyer to be able to take the top off the defense here for the Chargers. And I like some of the way that the Chargers kind of have bounced back and after a couple of pretty lousy defensive performances to start the season. So I think they can get a pretty comfortable win here against a Hoyer-led Vegas team.
All right, and real quick, because I don't want to get to your two totals. The Colts, it's a one-point spread against the Rams. Short week for the Rams. You just think the Colts are the better football team?
Yeah, that and I, you know, Rams really fell apart late in that contest with some of the injuries to their offensive line. And, you know, some of the amazing play you saw from Stafford in the early part of the season was really, really, you know, what the pivotal part that wasn't really discussed a ton was that he was very well protected. Some of that was the team, you know, he faced week one and the Seahawks couldn't rush the passer. But in general, with a little, you know, now a short turnaround, another really just actually the Rams are probably in the worst spot of the week. If you want to talk about situational stuff, they played on the road at Cincinnati on a Monday night. Then they go back to L.A. and then they're flying to Indianapolis for a short week. You know, two flights across the country. Absolutely miserable. Oh, by the way, this is their third road game now out of four. Also applies to Miami. So Miami and L.A. Rams really logging a lot of frequent flyer miles early in the season, and I think you might start to see some impacts there. We're kind of in the very early part of the season where, you know, rest and flight is pretty imbalanced across some of these teams, and the two that really stand out are Indy and Buffalo being the beneficiaries of those advantages.
Okay, your two totals are?
The one that seems like the lowest hanging fruit, which I'm sure those never seem to work out, is the Carolina-Minnesota one. Carolina's defense is not what we expected at all because of some of the injuries they're dealing with. Minnesota should be able to score well into the 20s, if not the 30s in this one. And I think that you're not going to see Bryce Young. They seem to be inclined to, you know, keep him in a little bit of bubble wrap here. And Andy Dalton actually has, I think, a much higher ceiling with this team and, you know, with his experience. So Minnesota's defense is among the bottom five, I think, pretty obviously. Carolina's is bottom half, and when you account for injuries, I have them in the bottom 10. So I'm not exactly sure why this total is south of 47. I think anything better, you know, 46 and a half or better, I think, is a bet to the over with Carolina Minnesota. Cincy Tennessee looks a little high to me. It looked high at 44 and a half yesterday. I didn't really get why we were giving that much credit to Tennessee's offense to be able to go score for score with Cincinnati. And I like in general the idea that you're getting a limited Joe Burrow in terms of pocket mobility against the Tennessee pass rush and really just a front four that's pretty outstanding there. So that, again, it looks like a pretty ugly contest. And if Joe Burrow turns out to be perfectly healthy, then so be it. But I think it's going to take more than just a week, and particularly a short week, for him to get right to the tune where he's able to attack the part of the field where Tennessee is most vulnerable. And Tennessee's defense also quietly getting healthier. Tennessee's offense is among the worst in the league, if not the worst. I guess you'd have to put Chicago in the discussion, but I think Tennessee is probably the 32nd best offense.
All right, so over in the Vikings-Carolina game, under on the Bengals-Titans game. Just back to the Vikings for a second. We just talk about the most auto overy teams, and we were talking about the Dolphins. Are the Vikings just as auto over as the Dolphins are, in your opinion?
I mean, I think so. You have to keep an eye on some of the offensive line injuries for the Vikings, because if Kirk Cousins is under pressure, then things go a little pear-shaped for that offense. But I don't think Carolina is healthy enough to really make that matter. And I think Minnesota is going to get probably 28 is a realistic baseline expectation for them in this game.
Yeah, Bears the only team thus far to have all three games go over the total, it should be noted. Drew, great to see you. Great to have you back, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, best of luck, you guys.
Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, and of course the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor. Paul Spohr on baseball next. Numbers Game.
Oh.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back with another week of football at DraftKings Sportsbooks, keeping us in on the NFL action with great offers every single game day. New customers can bet $5, get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Throw five down on any of this week's epic matchups to walk away an instant winner. Football's more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with code Vegas. New customers can bet just $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. With code Vegas, the crown is yours. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada at the D here in downtown Las Vegas. Still to come, Kelly guesses some college football guessing lines. Some college football spreads coming up. Exciting.
I kind of forgot about that. I just noticed the thing from last week where you've got your Richard Jefferson look going. The computer really does cut it off. You have no idea.
If I do this.
Yeah, Gil really has four buttons undone right now. You just have no idea.
It's a plunging collar is what it is. Plunging. Richard Jefferson can pull it off better. And still to come also, Todd Wishnev with his annual story, The Yom Kippur Massacre, the greatest gambling story there ever was. Paul Sporer joins us now because it is the final week of the Major League Baseball regular season. He'd join us even if it wasn't the final week. But it's that good right now with the AL West, the AL East, and both wild card situations still to be decided. Paulie joins us now from his lair in Austin, Texas. He comes to us from Fangraphs and, of course, the Sleeper in the Bus podcast. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm well, Gil. How are you?
Doing very well. What's that hat? What do you got going there?
Detroit Stars Negro League team.
Yeah, love that. Detroit Stars Negro League team back in the day. How many baseball caps? It's always, you always go low on this. How many do you own?
Upwards of 35, 40. See, I'm expanding the collection.
I would have put a zero on that. That's interesting to me. Only 35. So I just want to go through this first.
You mentioned I go low, though. It could be 50. Anyway, continue. 50. Not the point.
No. Here, so we're looking at season win totals. All season win totals will be decided, obviously, by the end of the week. There are seven clubs out of Major League Baseball's 30 that have yet to have their season win totals decided. The Toronto Blue Jays, 91.5 was their number. They're at 87. Boston Red Sox, they were at 78.5. They're currently at 76 wins. Minnesota Twins, 84.5. They're at 83. The Seattle Mariners, 86.5. They're at 84. They're staggering to the finish line there. Unders liking the staggering. Philadelphia Phillies, 88.5 was their number. They're at 87. The Dodgers at 96.5. They're at 96. And the Giants, who are at 81.5, they are at 78. The biggest, so when you look back, all the other teams are decided. The biggest teams to the over, the most dramatic wins to the over this year, you can guess them, Paul. Your guess would be the
Marlins,
Baltimore Orioles.
Or the Reds. Oh, Orioles. Yeah. Well, see, the reason that one trips me up a little bit, though, is like, I'm not saying I called it. I didn't think they were going to win the East, but I did think that there could have been a bit more hype on them. I this young club, I really did like them. So again, I'm not trying to go revisionist, like, oh, I knew that. But I would have thought that maybe the Marlins or the Reds, with the success that they've had, would have been bigger, to be honest.
Yeah, Orioles were at 76.5. They're at 97 currently. The Reds are number two. The Reds were at 65.5. They're at 80. To the under, can you guess who the biggest under?
Got to be Padres and Cardinals.
Mets number one.
Mets, oh, God, yeah. I haven't thought about them since June.
Since June, right.
And so, like, they were buried so early, that's why I missed that one. But yes, that makes a ton of sense. I got to imagine Cards and Pods are up there, though.
They are 2 and 3. You got the second and third. The Mets, 93.5. They're at 71. The Cardinals were 88.5. They're at 68. So just behind the Mets. And then the Padres, 93.5, and they're at 77. The Padres, we have to just talk about, because last night the Giants beat the Padres 2-1. It was the game that represented both of those clubs' season. The Giants, with anemic offense, barely eke it out with a great performance from Logan Webb, who 22 out of 33 of his pitching performances this year, the Giants have given him two runs of run support or fewer. So it's
well, DeGrom's out, so somebody has to get that sort of horrendous luck.
That's exactly right.
So it has to go somewhere.
And then the Padres, man, they lose another one-run game. The Padres this year, a plus 90 run differential, and in one-run games, I want to get the exact expanded.
7-23.
7-23 and 0-12 in extra innings.
in extras. That's the only thing that could have made it more Padres yesterday, is if it had gone into extras.
That's
but
right.
Other than that, it is a perfect microcosm of their season. And it's why, Gil, I had such a hard time ever getting rid of them as we talked throughout the summer. I kept going back to them. I kept saying, you know, because run differential is a great stat to kind of get you on the right path and looking at teams that are under or overperforming. And one run records usually come back to the pack to be around 500. You know, we saw it on the other end a couple years ago with Seattle, that first year that they started to make some noise. It was due to a really strong one run record. Well, now you can see what happens on the opposite end of it. And of course, this is the season's going to run out before the Padres can regress, but that won't happen next year. I know that they might blow some things up. Remember the, you know, the article at The Athletic came out last week that says that things are kind of poisonous there right now. But the thing of it is like this doesn't require a full scale blow up. You can chalk up a lot of this to like the cliche of that's baseball. I know that that doesn't sit well with people when it's the negative end and your team just has to be like, well, that's baseball. But like, I don't think that they lack clutchiness or anything like that. I just think that you're never putting up a 7-23 one run record again with this club or any club, really.
Yeah.
That's the thing. This does not happen. The Tigers are 21-20 in one run games. Even a crappy team like the White Sox are 19-28. Like 7-23 does not happen, especially when you're a good team. And I know that the record says that they're not, but this Padres team is not bad. They're just not bad.
They're just not bad. It, you know, on the one hand, it is baseball, but I want to try to make sort of a macro baseball betting point about this, which is, you know, we all, before the season, we analyze your starting rotation, we analyze the lineup, and maybe we give, I mean, I think we're better at giving bullpen assessments, but is there something in the Padres bullpen? I mean, 0-12 in extra innings is just impossible. Like, you almost have to try to do that. I mean, is there something we miss then with teams? Maybe there isn't. Maybe it's just baseball, as you said. But is there something we miss when assessing teams?
I don't think so, because and I don't know that you could ever perfectly narrow it down anyway because of bullpen volatility. It's the most volatile thing year to year. They have the best closer in baseball, right? Like, so it's like they're starting from that point and then working their way back to, from their starters, you know, the bridge there. The bridge wasn't that bad. It's not littered with 4.5, 5 ERA guys. It really just doesn't make sense. The postmortem on them is just going to be like the shrug emoji, because, like, I don't know what you make of this. And obviously they're going to lose some players. I know, Snell is a free agent. I think Waka is too. You know, Joe Musgrove was hurt. He'll be back. So, you know, they're going to have to make some moves because they're losing some players. They got to figure out some things with all this money because they keep paying out. But they do not have to tear this down and start over. It's not that kind of situation there. They might have to from a personality standpoint, because like I said, that Athletic article says some things aren't going well there. But in terms of the talent on the field, you run this exact team back with replete with the same injuries and everything, and there's just no way it's 77 and 80 again.
My counter to that, though, would be, is like, I really don't believe Blake Snell could ever do this again. Like, the most walks in the league, highest walk percentage, a historically great strand percentage. Like, it just, you could never do another season like this. So anyway, with only a couple minutes left, I want to ask you this.
Sure.
We've seen, I mean, the Blue Jays, I don't think they're very good. It looks like they're getting to the playoffs. The Astros, as soon as I make a bet on them to win the West, they get swept by the Royals. Talk about a team that has a bad extra inning record. They're 1-8. I could just go from team to team. There's so many teams where you're like, the Rangers, the schizophrenia of the Rangers, sometimes they're great. Then they go on stretches where they're bad, then they're great again. Who do you trust in the postseason? Just give me the list of teams, both AL and NL, that you're like, okay, if someone wanted to make a futures bet right now, narrow it to this group.
It's so boring, but obviously the Braves and the Dodgers, and kind of like the maybe off the beaten path team that I do like, is unfortunately in the NL, so they'll probably have to get through at least one of those clubs, if not both, and that's the Brewers, because they line up three aces in a playoff situation. They're not just Devin Williams in the bullpen. They have a bridge to him, a guy like Joel Piamps breaking out this year. I think they have a capable lineup. It's gone cold at times, which has led to their ebbs and flows throughout the season, but they could get hot. I could easily see them making a run a la Philly, where all of a sudden we look up and they're playing a lot better than we thought. That Philly team is pretty good too. I will tell you a team in the AL. I like this Minnesota Twins team. I really think that they're going to get short shrift because they beat the AL Central and they didn't do it very convincingly. So everyone's going to be like, what's up with this team. My concern right now is the injuries on offense. But as far as a pitching situation, I love their pitching. They're going to send somebody like Bailey Ober into the bullpen to be a 2-3 inning type guy. I think that's massive. Lopez, Gray, Ryan as a top three. Yoan Duran waiting in the back there with Griffin Jacks, Caleb Theobar. This is an interesting ball club to me, this Twins team. It really depends if anybody gets healthy in time for the playoffs, but I do like the Twins in the AL to maybe make some noise.
Okay. Well, that was an answer I did not expect. I'm glad I asked it. The Minnesota Twins, a lot of passion there from Paulie on the Twins. Thank you, sir. Obviously, the caveat that the Braves and Dodgers are still the headline. Paul Sporer, everybody. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
At Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R. Kelly guesses some college football lines. We'll talk to Mark Borchardt on baseball. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.